You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Clinton, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on each tray, and you get a whole service. Just on a...
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 26 of Tech Talk Radio for 2008. I'm your host, Andrew McColl. This week, it seems consumers have the upper hand over eBay, thanks to a bit of friendly persuasion from Australia's consumer watchdog, the ACCC. The world's largest online auction website, eBay, tried to remove nearly all forms of alternate payment recently and force Australian users to use eBay's own preferred payment facility, PayPal. But the ACCC had other ideas. Also, the arrival of the iPhone is now less than a week away, and the dust looks like it's settled. Optus, Vodafone and Telstra are all set to sell what will soon be the ubiquitous Apple telephone. But poor old Hutchison, who runs the CityCentric 3 network, still seems to be out in the cold. Also this week, it's heartening to see a new government initiative designed to get seniors online. Only one in five Australians over the age of 65 years currently uses the internet. According to the Rudd government, the needs of older Australians wishing to be trained in the use of the internet will be met by the creation of approximately 2,000 seniors internet kiosks provided by community organisations that support seniors, and they will also be funded by the government. And finally, if you're an armchair sports enthusiast, the new TiVo and TopField PVRs are about to hit the market, just in time for next month's Olympic Games. Adam tells us about the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to the minefield of buying consumer electronics for your home TV requirements.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Will the iPhone become the new security threat of 2008? Plasma and LCD TVs blamed for accelerated global warming. Beware, Olympic fever could impact your network. Telstra throws mud at other bidders for the national broadband network. And we hear how Symbian have embraced Microsoft's new server 2008. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week, a croaky Dr. Ron with Tech Talk News. eBay is still forcing sellers to use PayPal. Google is forced to release user logs to Viacom. Westpac bank chaos is blamed on a computer glitch. New laser import bans announced by customs. And the federal government commits $15 million to broadband for seniors. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Online auction house eBay is still forcing its sellers to accept PayPal, according to a report in The Age Tech last week. According to the article, eBay has still not withdrawn a recent policy forcing all sellers to at least offer PayPal as one of the payment options. Sellers are reporting that eBay is systematically deleting auction listings from sellers who state in their item descriptions that they prefer to be paid with non-PayPal methods, such as direct bank deposit. Several eBay members have complained to the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission over eBay's actions, and an ACCC spokesperson said the regulator was considering these complaints carefully. The ACCC issued a draft notice in June rejecting eBay's application for a PayPal-only auction site. Many sellers prefer to avoid using PayPal because it charges them a fee for each transaction. eBay maintains that payment methods other than PayPal are not safe and do not have the same level of fraud protection as PayPal. The ACCC is investigating. In a blow to the seminal video-sharing website YouTube, its owner Google has been ordered by an American court to disclose information about who watches which video clips and when. Dismissing privacy concerns, the federal judge overseeing a $1 billion copyright infringement lawsuit against YouTube ordered that the logs be released to Viacom, a publicly listed American media conglomerate. The judge heard legal argument that Viacom needed the data to demonstrate that their copyright-protected videos are being illegally shared on YouTube. Lawyers for Google said that production of the data, which would include information on when each video gets played, YouTube usernames and IP addresses, would be expensive, time-consuming, and a breach of user privacy. But the judge ruled last week that Viacom and other plaintiffs had a legitimate need for the information. He said that Google's privacy concerns were speculative and that an IP address could not positively identify one particular individual. The judge did, however, reject a request from the plaintiffs for Google to disclose YouTube source code and said there was no evidence Google manipulated its search algorithms to treat copyright-infringing videos differently. Viacom is seeking $1 billion in damages from Google, saying YouTube has built a business by using the internet to willfully infringe copyrights on Viacom shows, which include Comedy Central and Nickelodeon programs. Google did not say whether it would appeal the ruling at this time. Thousands of people missed out on their weekly pay packets last week after an alleged computer malfunction at the Westpac Bank, which affected $1 billion in transactions. The malfunction occurred on Thursday and was the result of a so-called processing error, according to Westpac, and left the bank's payroll and direct debit systems in complete chaos. Thousands of employees, including some from New South Wales Health, missed out on Thursday payday, while others received twice the weekly wage, and some direct debits were even deducted twice. A Westpac spokeswoman said the bank hoped the problem would be rectified by Friday and assured customers that no one would be out of pocket any more than for legitimate transactions. The Minister for Home Affairs, Mr. Bob Debus, said that it would be illegal to import high-intensity handheld laser pointers into Australia without a permit from Tuesday last week. The Customs Prohibited Imports regulations were changed after a spate of laser pointer attacks on aircraft attempting to land at Sydney airports. The amendment to the regulations affects handheld laser pointers designed or adapted to emit a laser beam greater than 1 milliwatt. From Tuesday last week, these items can only be imported with the written permission of the Minister for Home Affairs or an authorised person prior to the arrival of the goods in Australia. The regulations supplement existing state legislation where, in many cases, laser pointers are already classified as controlled or prohibited weapons. It is hoped that the update to these regulations will prevent people purchasing the devices from overseas through mail-order catalogues and over the internet. And the federal government is calling for applications from suitably qualified organisations to deliver the National Broadband for Seniors program. Broadband for Seniors is part of a wider Australian government initiative, Making Ends Meet, Plan for Older Australians, People with Disabilities and Carers. The government is committing $15 million to the program and is expected to be delivered between September this year and November 2010. The Minister for Families, Housing, Community Services and Indigenous Affairs, the Honourable Jenny Macklin MP, said that only one in five Australians over the age of 65 years currently uses the internet. From the selection process, the department will enter into a funding agreement with a successful organisation to deliver approximately 2,000 seniors internet kiosks and training nationally. Applications from interested organisations close on the 8th of August. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Do no evil, Google sued for $1 billion. Lucy Butler, a self-confessed Luddite, joins us on the panel this evening.
I get in a lot of trouble for my parents because I never call people. I don't like calling people.
Really?
I'd rather text.
Hey, yeah. Hang on, nerd alert. What?
The microphone's lit on, no one heard me.
Nah, the panel's a bit miffed as to the Mac networking issue.
Which is which?
What do you mean, which is which?
It's exacerbated by the fact that we're Macintosh people.
That's the one I scoffed at and blew my nose on.
Yeah.
One of the big features of the new 3G iPhone is its ability to synchronise to Exchange.
It looks like TiVo will sell for around $700 Australian without a monthly subscription fee.
And hacking attack is highly embarrassing.
Thank you.
It would be.
Thank you very much.
You can't vote with your feet because there are no other options.
So I wonder if ICANN forgot to do their Windows update on their server 2008.
But he's decided to pull the pin full time. Come on, Bill, when were you in the office last?
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting in front of me this evening is Dr. Ron, and we're going to be presenting the 27th edition of Tech Talk Radio for you this evening. Some other interesting news, too, this week, Dr. Ron. iPhone, that wonderful little everywhere ubiquitous little device, well, soon to be ubiquitous little device.
Have you got one?
No.
Are you getting one? You got to get one?
I don't know.
You don't know? You're for it, but then you sort of swayed off.
Yeah, look, MMS, there's a few
MMS
issues.
Is the thing that's got you, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I'd like to get one. At this point in time, I'm sort of sitting on the fence. I'll wait and see what happens when the first batch come out.
Yeah.
There's been pricing announced by some of the telcos, which we'll touch on in just a few moments. There's also been some other interesting sort of news around, too, that the iPhone is going to become a new security threat if it hasn't become already.
In what way?
Well, Google is making its Google Talk instant messaging application available for Apple's iPhone and iPod Touch. However, these new applications come with the light of new security scares. So if you run your Google apps on top of your iPhone, watch out. One of Google's software engineers revealed the news about Google Talk in a blog last Wednesday. In addition to sending your friends Gmail messages from your iPhone, you can now chat with them while you're on the move. That's what you do, isn't it? Oh, you're more of a social. You text what you're doing. I'm happy. I'm on the tram. I'm on the train. I'm on the bus.
Yeah.
Anyway, the application doesn't require any software to be installed or downloaded. Instead, it works with the phone's browser, so you can simply go to the site and log in and start chatting. So there's a couple of differences, though, with Google Talk and the iPhone versus a computer. For one, to receive messages, the application needs to be open on the Safari phone browser. When the users navigate away from the Google Talk window in the browser, their status is set to unavailable.
Ah.
Is it good? I guess it saves you having to say you're unavailable, but you've got to have Safari loaded up on the device.
Yeah, you've used Safari. You use Safari a lot, don't you, at work?
I do. It's a good browser. It does lack the security, though, that the other browsers do tend to have.
But you're happy with how it renders images?
Oh, yeah.
It looks
really nice. Makes a website look really nice, especially text. Because Firefox, despite its new version 3, hasn't really done anything to the way it renders text. And, of course, Microsoft's Internet Explorer 7 is potentially one of the world's worst browsers, says he who develops websites, and it never looks like what you expect it to look like.
No, that's right.
So, but anyway, that said, Google has tried to keep the experience close to what users can expect on their desktop or laptop computers. They can select contacts from a quick list, search contacts, and manage conversations. However, while Apple continues to release new applications for the iPhone, the leading Mac OS X research says Apple has not kept the iPhone operating system up to date with its patches and other issues for the desktop, which we'll talk about a little bit later on tonight too. Mac OS X had a bit of a patch Tuesday for one of another brand name's releases recently.
Yes, which is what we always use to refer to the Microsoft weekly patch releases.
Yes. So there's the iPhone. Yes, there's some new plans becoming available. Telstra obviously got a $0 plan for the iPhone if you're interested in that sort of technology without paying any money.
Still haven't seen any information though from Telstra about bandwidth. And data usage. That's what we're needing to see more than anything.
Yes. I reckon if you go to their broadband plan packages, I think it'll be very much along those sort of lines. So for $29 worth of broadband, you'll get about 80 meg.
80 meg,
which is not huge.
It's not huge.
And let me tell you that if you've got a broadband card and you boot up on your broadband and you just check your mail and do a few web browsery things, you can go through 20 meg just like that by the time a few of the things on your laptop, like doing a bit of an update.
Yeah, yep.
And I'm sure OS X would be pretty much along the same lines. I even saw pictures on the internet, some bright sparks loaded up Windows CE on the iPhone.
Windows CE?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Even I cringe at that.
Oh, yes. But it just goes to show you can run anything you like on it. So, but Optus has announced its iPhone pricing plan this week. Essentially, Optus has changed all of its data prices to accommodate the iPhone. Well, maybe Telstra will do something like that too. Because if everybody's getting in on the act, the iPhone's going to be very much in demand, a very sought-after device. And I think the people who want to use the iPhone mobile with broadband will probably want a good data plan. I would.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the one carrier that touts itself as being targeting the hip young generation.
Yes.
Three, deafening silence. We haven't had any iPhone announcement from them.
Don't know what's going on. Anyway, back to Optus.
Optus.
But they've sort of accommodated data prices, but they've bolted it onto an existing structure, like one of their existing plans. While Telstra technically managed to reveal its iPhone pricing first, that's on a $0 plan, that's about all they told us, it omitted the key detail. It would tell you how much it would charge you for an iPhone, but not what plans would be involved. Exactly what you said, Dr.
Mm.
Optus today became the first Australian provider. Sorry, that was the other day. Probably a couple of days ago now. Optus became the first Australian provider to offer more key details outlining its iPhone pricing scheme for both pre- and post-paid customers. Starting off, $19 a month, all the way up to $179, depending on your data.
$179?
Depending on your data.
I thought I paid a lot. I paid $99 or thereabouts a month.
Yeah, well, if you're an early adopter of this technology, you do
$80 more
charged
for it. Would you pay that a month?
No. That's why I'm going to sit on the fence. You've asked me tonight whether I'd buy one of these new devices, an iPhone, and I think we'll sit back and wait and see what happens. But there will be the boffins that'll be there first thing, the must-have people that want an Apple in their back pocket, an iPhone that is. But the good news is, at least with Telstra, it will roam onto their 3G network in the bush. So if you're a bush person living outside the city and you don't have access to 850 meg HSDPA, which is the third generation mobile network, then chances are you'll be roaming on somebody else's, and you might even be back down to the 2G, the previous generation's data.
Back on the GSM.
Yeah, GPRS.
Ooh,
that's
right.
What they've got in the United States, I believe.
Yeah, GSM's the name of the type of network. GPRS is the data backbone of that network.
Yes.
That's a lot slower.
Now, these contracts from Optus are available on 0, 12 or 20-month contracts. So, you have to spend a minimum of $79 per month over 24 months to get the 8-gig iPhone. So there you go. Big bucks. You can buy the devices outright if you want to.
Yep.
They're around about $699 US, I think they're going to sell them outright for. So what that translates to over here is probably about $700 or $800, which puts them in the ballpark of an equivalent HSDPA type handset.
If you were going to buy one outright here, that's correct. Mm.
So what do you reckon? Yes? Is it for Dr. Ron? Is it for later down the track?
Look, I really loved the first generation one that David Yarmouni brought in here for us about 12 months ago.
Yes.
And there's some photos of that up on the forum as well. Forum.techtalkradio.com.au. Log on there or register if you're not already a user there. I really liked the interface. I liked all that it did. I don't know if it's right for me or not. I like the fact it's got Wi-Fi. I like the fact that it's HSDPA. But I don't know. I'm not...
MMS? No? Yes?
Yeah, MMS. Yeah, I do. I do use MMS, and that's one thing which I'm disappointed.
I use MMS to send you accidentally images that you're not expecting.
I've seen some of those accidentally. They're not on the forum.
Thank goodness for that.
But, that's one of the things that I'm not too mad on. It's also got a fairly low, sort of low-res, crappy camera in it, from what people are saying. You'd expect it
2 megapixels.
You'd expect a bit better than that, I would have thought.
Gives it room to move.
In 2008, potentially.
6 megapixels, I'd say, would be pretty much where you'd be wanting a phone camera to be these days. Or is that asking too much?
I don't know. I reckon 5 is about normal.
Well, if you think about what you want to do with it, it's really going to come down to the youth of today who'll be using it. I don't think the more senior members of the telephone industry or users would be using MMS cameras or snappy sort of photos using a camera. But I can see it at parties. I can see it being used at all sorts of strange things. Although, even last week, when we had
Lucy,
she was saying that, we don't really use much of that technology.
Well, that's right. She relies on Bluetooth to send photos between her friends.
Yeah, which I'm sure the device will do. So.
Yes, definitely. Got some follow-ups, Andrew, for this week?
Yes. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. Whilst Dr. Ron reads the follow-up, you can contribute to tonight's show.
Please do. Jason says, hi, not sure if you've mentioned this before, but I have heard you talking about GPSs lately. The Queensland buses. We've got a bit of a public transport.
We have got a good theme going here. We had trains
And trams last week.
Yeah, and now we're up to Queensland
buses. Queensland buses. Yep. They have a new go-card system, which relies on GPS signals to calculate the location of the bus. You hop on and swipe the card. When you hop off, it uses GPS to work out your stop and charges your card appropriately.
And that's pretty impressive.
Well, it would be. But unfortunately, says Jason, the main bus exchange at Queen Street Mall is underground. they've had many issues with trying to charge people on their cards when the buses go underground, to the point of having to reset the machines. We all know what happens when a GPS device loses its GPS signal. It takes ages to lock on again. I wonder what genius thought this up. Thanks for that information, Jason.
They obviously weren't anticipating an underground bus system.
What happens when a GPS goes underground, Andrew?
Not much.
Not much at all.
Not much. That's the thing.
You need to see the sky.
If you try driving through tunnels and things, you just become you just disappear off the map,
don't you?
That's
right, because you can't see the satellites.
Mm.
Tech Junkie says, went to the Chadston Tea Life store today.
Oh, yes. Tea Life. It's a bit like an Apple store, only
it's a Telstra store.
It's a Telstra store, yes. There's a few of them around now.
To be honest, not worth the trip from West Gippsland. The store, which is supposedly modelled on the Apple store, just like you're saying, Andrew, is just a phone shop where you can play with phones, something which any other phone retailer will do if they want to make a sale. I did find out one thing, though, which I didn't even ask about. The salesman told me they will bring the iPhone out on July 11, same date as the other telcos. Interesting. No other info given, unfortunately. From Tech Junkie in Siberia. That's Cyber IA. That's clever, isn't
it? Yes,
it is.
Thank you for your emails.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so we've got July 11 to look forward to.
It is. It's going to be a big day. 4 days away from our data broadcast. It could be past tense by now, depending if you're listening to us on the pod or
could
something.
Could be. Could be.
Now, Dr. Ron, you've got an LCD TV.
I do.
And there's this issue with global warming at the moment. You've probably seen it in the mainstream press.
I have.
Apparently, we're going to run out of water in the not-too-distant future. The Murray-Darling's looking pretty sick.
Are you going to tell me my LCD television's causing global warming?
Would you believe...
contributing to it?
Absolutely. A gas used in the making of flat-screen televisions, which is nitrogen trifluoride...
Right.
For those of you collecting numbers and things, it's NF3, is being blamed for damaging the atmosphere and accelerating global warming.
Ooh.
Almost half of all the televisions sold around the globe so far this year have been plasmas or LCDs. But this boom could be coming to a huge environmental cost.
Because
what do you do when you finish, when your lifespan of your plasma or your LCD has expired? This is one thing we haven't sort of really come to terms with yet.
Mm.
You see the hard rubbish collections around here, and you see the old CRTs out in the nature strip. I've yet to see a plasma on the nature strip.
Yeah, well this is it. I was hoping to get at least 10 years out of my television, which I purchased a couple of years ago.
Is it going to be like the fridge issue, where we had CFC fluoro...
Chlorofluorocarbons.
Yes, in our refrigerants, and now they put a different gas in which doesn't leak and is safer, but we've got this issue with these guys.
That's right, they put Freon in now, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, this nitrogen trifluoride... That gas.
T3? No, what was it? Not
T3.
NF3. T3 something all the other different.
Yep, ironically, is not covered by the Kyoto Protocol, as it was only produced in tiny amounts when the treaty was signed in 1997. Levels of this gas in the atmosphere have not been measured, but scientists say it is concerned and are calling for it to be included in any future emissions cutting agreement. So not only will we have a carbon tax very shortly, we'll also have an NF3 tax.
Interesting.
Well, maybe. Pure speculation, but you never know. So
NF3 disposal tax. It's like when you get your car serviced, and they always charge you an environmental levy at the bottom of the bill. Have you noticed that? That's for the disposal of the waste products from the engine.
Wow.
From the oils and such things.
Well, I think, yes, user pays. I think carbon taxes have got to be a viable alternative too. Not that we're a green show, but if you think about all the technology that we're using, it's powered by something, isn't it?
Yeah, has to be.
And in Australia, traditionally, it's a coal-powered generator down at a power station near you, producing all sorts of strange, you know, gases or predominantly carbon going into the atmosphere.
Mm.
Who pays for that? Well, you know, our kids will.
Mm.
They're saying that the Great Barrier Reef's not long. Yeah, it's probably got until 2050 or something like that.
Yeah,
too. So
yeah.
I think, if anything, raising prices and using technology will certainly make people think twice.
Is LCD going to become an outdated technology
Absolutely.
Fairly soon?
OLED will be out very shortly.
OLED, that's right. That's right.
Which, that's based on the LED technology, like we see in our little power buttons and things like that. Very, very power efficient. Electronic devices which glow.
So potentially...
Like traffic lights. Have you seen traffic lights lately?
Oh, they're super bright. The LED traffic lights.
If you're coming back from a party and you're slightly hungover and that green one kicks in, oh, you need the sunnies at 2 a.m. Have you noticed?
Yeah, when they change. That's right. They change and your eye is not accustomed to that wavelength, is it? The light's
wavelength. Well, actually, your eye is most sensitive from recollection from my studies at school to green.
Oh,
it's
is that
in
right?
the middle of the visible spectrum. Because you've got blue at one end, red at the other, and, of course, green's in the middle. So it does tend to become a bit piercing. But that's the LED technology, and they're little bright little suckers, aren't they?
They are. Well, maybe this problem is a manageable problem. If they've identified it now, and we're not going to be using LCD monitors maybe in 15 years' time. It's something that we can manage, we can plan for, and there can be a proper disposal system put in place.
Absolutely. Just as a byline, Professor Michael Prather from the University of California estimates that 4,000 tons of NF3 will be produced in 2008, and that number is likely to double in the years after. So, yes, something to be wary of, something to think about when you're potentially disposing of your flat screen.
I don't think I've ever disposed of a flat screen or an LCD panel.
Another one. It's a bit like plastic bags, isn't it? You know, they just sort of, it will be disposed of eventually.
Yeah.
So how they'll end up being filled. But
what about really old laptops? Have you ever thrown out an old laptop?
No, I normally give them to you.
Yeah, I think I've got them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still there's one I just read the news from before that took 18 minutes to boot up, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's, they're all still being used, but... No, people will be doing that, though. They'll be throwing out old machines and old panels.
Mm-hmm. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Panel of two this evening, Dr. Ron and myself, Andrew McComb. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you'd like to get on board and send us an email.
We're Twittering.
Yes, we are.
TTR2008.
Yes.
Is in front of Andrew, and RK5075 is in front of me.
Yeah, Twitter away. We've got a lot of new people following.
Hello, you've been Twittering, which has been great. I saw you during the week. You were in the doghouse, and you were editing stuff.
Absolutely. Now, one that you tweeted, which I thought was interesting, JD is sending an Apple Store field report from Sydney. What happened?
He is.
Is that for next week or this week?
It's for next week.
Oh, good. That'll be good.
He deviated via the Apple Store in his recent holiday.
Well, we know how much of an Apple file he is.
Indeed. And he hit the record button, walked in the door, and recorded all his thoughts and first impressions, so we'll be hearing from him next week about that.
Absolutely. Mm. Now, on to other things which you touched on in the news too, Dr. Ron. This is the Google and Viacom dilemma.
Oh, yes.
A judge has ordered Google to give the YouTube user data to Viacom. Now, I don't know, that's a privacy issue, which obviously the US has decided to say, well, in the interest of who's been uploading maybe copy-protected material... Viacom's going to go after them.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Viacom's one of several plaintiffs which are taking legal action against Google's YouTube, and they've said that in order to demonstrate whether or not their copyright-protected videos are being shared illegally, they want access to YouTube logs, and the judge agreed with them and said, yes, Google must release the logs and all the user information.
Well, apparently Viacom's seeking the data as a potential evidence for the billion-dollar copyright suit against Google. Well, Google's got pretty deep pockets, but at the end of the day, this is going to be one of those, you know, decisions which will make everyone stop and take notice, won't it?
Well, it certainly will. It's got ramifications right through all internet services, not just YouTube and video sharing. It opens up an enormous can of worms in terms of user privacy. The judge also said that he thought it was okay because, in his opinion, the release of an IP address didn't uniquely identify an individual.
No, it doesn't, does it? Really?
Well, I don't know. Do you reckon it does? Or
well, only
it doesn't.
If you're on dial-up, it doesn't, unless you get back into the ISP's logs and say who was using 203.111.111, et cetera, et cetera,
yeah,
at 15:23 on the 22nd of this month.
But as more and more people move from dial-up accounts and having dynamically assigned IP addresses to static IP addresses, or ones that don't change with...
Well,
DSL
that's all
right, type services.
Yes, DSL, fixed line. But what about mobile broadband?
Well, you'll have one every time you connect, won't you?
Yeah, no such thing as a fixed IP address when you're connecting via the wonders of the Next G network or Hutchison 3 or anything. You get a different IP address each and every time.
That's true, but I've got IP addresses at home on my services that have been the same for years. 2 years, 3 years. You can't tell me that I couldn't be identified by that number.
No.
If someone knew what it was.
You never know.
If it turned up in a log somewhere. Crikey. It's a big can of worms. So I hope that, well, I'm sure this federal judge gets paid a lot more than I do to make legal decisions, but I hope he's ready for a rocky ride, because it's ramifications of this will be felt for some time to come yet, I expect.
Absolutely. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb in this evening. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Hello to Russell Howard. I just read your email just then. And hello to, work this one out, Two Crows Down.
Two Crows Down. Yeah, he's a forum
Twitter user.
Hello, Two Crows Down. And hello on Twitter. Terrific. And hello, Russell, as well.
Yes. All right, the knives are out. Telstra takes on the National Broadband Network. This is interesting.
Ooh.
Telstra has hit out at its critics with claims that it released the National Broadband Network regulatory submissions has failed the veil to reveal a unified attack on the telco. So what they're basically saying is that all the people have now got information on telco, and they're having a go, have got all the information on Telstra's network, and they're now having a go at them. Telstra Group Managing Director for Public Policy and Communications, Dr. Phil, that's Phil Burgess.
And your mate.
Yeah, he's a friend of the show.
One who refuses to come in.
Yeah, said many of the submissions showed key players have no interest in building out high-speed broadband, providing better services for consumers, or real competition. No.
No, why does he say that?
Well, he says that this is demonstrated by the fact that they all seek a government mandate separation of Telstra that would weaken and undermine Australia's only integrated nationwide communications network so that the slashers can gain an advantage in specific markets where they compete.
Oh.
Not good, huh? But then again, in previous press releases I've seen too that Telstra is keen to basically not be a JV with anyone. They want to do it all themselves or with nobody. So there's the lack of joint venture issue there that Telstra has. Also, they're looking for a return on their investment of around 18%, which is also going to push the prices of broadband up, potentially, if they're trying to get that sort of return on investment. So
80% is not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
You don't get that in real estate.
If you've invested in superannuation and shares, you're in a negative at the moment.
Yeah, you have to be a bit of a shark to get that in on the share market as well.
Absolutely. All right, so that's a bit of Telstra news for this evening. There's a bit more coming up later on in the show. Also, we've got the Olympic Games coming up very shortly.
Yes, we do. We're telling everybody to avoid the .cn addresses a couple of weeks ago. Be careful where you browse.
Do you have any interest in the Olympic Games personally, Dr. Ron?
Financial interest, personal interest, commercial interest?
Personal.
No. Not really.
Do you think you're alone?
No, not really.
It's interesting.
I've watched the highlights and, go the Aussies, but I'm not going to be able
catch
to...
Catch it on the news when you come home?
I'll catch it on the news. Yeah. I'm not going to be glued to my mobile phone watching it streaming 24 hours a day, if that's what you're asking.
The 2008 Beijing Olympics, as we've just discussed, is nearly here, and for the first time, employees will be able to watch the games via a live streaming through a local host. Channel 7 will be streaming over 100 hours of footage from the games via Yahoo 7.
Yeah.
The problem is... Well, the anticipated problem is...
Yep.
People want to watch it on their work computers.
Well, yeah, they will.
So what do you think that'll happen to bandwidth? Like, ADSL in this country is already pretty, slow at the best of times, around 3 to 4 in the afternoon when all the kids get home from school and jump on their instant messaging.
Yeah.
Add to that, people wanting to watch copious quantities of Olympics online while sitting at their office because they don't have a telly in the office, do they?
Now, this is a very real problem. You had a similar experience, I think, at your office when the Pandora music streaming service was available to Australian citizens.
I remember that. That was a wonderful
service. And you thought, isn't this terrific? And we'll just start up a Pandora session here when we get into work, and someone else would start one up upstairs. And at the end of the week, you'd look at your bandwidth and go, whoa, where did we use all that? And that was just audio. Imagine if you've got a dozen people at your work who are going to have a window just not minimised, but just move down to the bottom left-hand corner of their screen, just streaming video continuously while they're at work. It's going to crank through the bandwidth, isn't it?
Not to mention everybody else trying to upload or download business files. Like, we're involved in broadcast, so as a result, we ship a lot of fairly sizable television files up and down the place. Now, I'm not saying anyone in our office might do it, but if the path to the server is congested where we're trying to send it to, well, goodness me, look out.
And it'll have a flow-on effect, too. It'll be everybody else who's using the links and using the paths.
So something to look out for, I guess, especially if you're a administrator in the office. You never know.
A lot of administrators ban particular sites for this very reason, because maybe naively the employees think, I'll just log on here and I'll eat my lunch for half an hour and I'll watch the Olympics, or I'll listen to Pandora, or I'll do something along those lines, and 500, 600, 800 megabytes later, bang, it's just, it's an
expensive
venture.
We'll find out in a month's time, won't we?
We will.
There'll be people all over the countryside going, oh, my bandwidth has all been used up.
Yeah, or my Olympic site's been blocked by my administrator.
Now, something else which was really quite interesting, the headline grabbed my attention as it went past this week. Telstra Mobile uses to get police powers.
Oh, I saw this on the rundown. What does this mean?
This was a headline that ZDNet... .com.au managed to generate for me, and I thought, oh, nothing like good luck here. Telstra customers will receive the same service telco companies have been providing the law authorities for years, the ability to track people's locations by their mobile phones. The new service, which is called Where Is Everyone, Where Is being Telstra's registered trademark for their, what is it, their internet search for, like, their directories look-up-y sort of thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's
their
the one.
Map thing, yeah.
It's their mappy thing, isn't it?
That's
their,
right.
Their map one.
Apparently it allows users to request a friend's and family's location on a map. It only works on Telstra mobiles because it's a service that they're providing, one of their value-added services. Now,
so you can log in and you can see where the person is on the map?
Yes.
Wow. Does the person have to consent to have that information released?
Well, when you get your handset...
I don't want my wife knowing where I am 100% of the time when mobile phone switched on.
Can I ask why? Or is that a topic for off-air?
I might be at, I might be at the flower shop and I might be buying her a surprise on the way home.
Mm, yes,
and
exactly.
The surprise might be ruined.
It could be. If she checks up and goes, what's she doing in the flower
my
shop?
My wife's listening. She'll be like, who are you trying to kid?
In answer to your question, Dr. Ron, I have a device,
yep.
A Sony Ericsson, which supports the GPS and the location positioning things. And what you have to do is you have to register with Where Is. And once you register, your device basically uses the lat long for the mobile phone. When you turn it on...
So you have an application that runs on your mobile phone, so you're aware that that's being sent.
Yep, and you can okay. It just sends your lat longs to this server every 5 minutes and cranks through the bandwidth.
Yep.
And basically you can log on through another mobile phone, through a web portal, and you can see where your other chosen friends are. Now, this could be good for university.
Yeah, it'd be
if you want to know where all your friends are.
You'd have a bit of fun with it, wouldn't you?
Yeah. It could be really good if you have rambunctious teenagers who go out at all strange hours of the day or night.
Mm.
You can tell them, you know, what were you doing over at Freddie's place when you said you were going over to Bill's place? Yes. So, yes, any teenager who knows their technological way around things would certainly have that turned off very quickly, I would have thought.
That's right.
But nonetheless, it's got a lot of potential. Like, look at it from point of view for, you know, the elderly. I'm just going out for a walk. I'll make sure you take your phone with you.
Yeah, isn't that a great... That would be a great application for technology.
Yeah, or people who are infirm for whatever reason, or people that are bushwalking.
Yep.
If you're out in the bush somewhere like that, you know, you see a lot of people get lost or miss, you know, lose their way for whatever reason. You've got one of these devices, chances are you may or may not be able to see a mobile phone network, but the chances that you do, it's got to be good, doesn't
that's right.
it?
If you can, then you've got that there as a backup.
So I think that's what we've got to look forward to. A lot of new little gadgets coming out like that. And Telstra have also released 4 new phones for their network too, which we might dig up later and have a bit of a chat. So there's plenty to choose from just when you're buying these devices. If that sort of service is for you, make sure you visit the appropriate Telstra shop and have a chat and have a look. Because it does, it works fairly well.
This whole location-based stuff is very new to us down here. The people listening in the United States will be yawning. They'll be going, what? We've had that for 15 years. Because it was mandated some years ago in the United States that new mobile telephones sold from a certain date had to have a GPS receiver in
them.
They've
had it for a while,
haven't they? And they've had to have the facility to send their Latin long information back to the network in case of an emergency if they call 911 or whatever their local emergency number is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very new to us. It's nothing that we've ever had here.
It'd be good if that would be handed off to our emergency services. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
It'd be fantastic.
Make a lot of people's lives a lot easier.
It would make a lot of sense, and it would help a lot of people.
All right. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you want to talk to us. We're going to take a break, get a drink, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
Listening.
Heaven help anyone who lives near a prison and wants to use a mobile telephone.
We tend to use that terminology sloppily and it can confuse.
Like a woman scorned.
NAB, web junk. We've got GPS on your outside and we've got triangulation when you're inside.
No, I'll do it again later.
That old chestnut.
Let's talk about Goosh.
Though she's not a human, she can act like a real girlfriend.
Where are you going to get your iPhone from? Are you going to get a Vodafone one or a Telstra one?
Independent.
10.5's had some problems.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Speaking of nerd conventions. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio.
Speaking of nerd conventions.
It's very good. You've done some new promos. You sold yourself there, Dr. Ron, in your recent vacation.
Yes, recent vacation and current sick leave. I've got a man cold, Andrew. It's terrible.
Yeah, I must admit, there's a lot of it going around at the moment. A lot of it. We mentioned before the break, the Olympics are coming to town.
Search for man cold on YouTube if you want to know what a man cold is.
Really?
Some very funny stuff.
Okay.
Sorry, we mentioned the Olympics. Yes, we did.
The TiVo and all sorts of electronic devices are heading our way just in time for the Olympic Games.
Channel 7's got the TiVo happening.
They have. Do you remember, put your old wannabe Wayback cap on, which you've got on at the moment, I see.
I do, yes.
Remember when television was simple? When I mean simple, I mean there was one standard.
And there were four channels.
Five.
Five?
Don't leave out SBS.
Oh, no, I'm going really simple. I'm sticking to VHF, baby.
Oh, okay,
good.
All right.
You're adding a level of complexity. Yeah, SBS.
Well, back in the good old days,
Like,
no wonder consumers are confused with today's modern technology.
Oh, we get confused by it.
Back then, you turned the telly on, and if you wanted to record it, there was only one device that could do it for you.
Yeah.
It was a VHS machine.
Yep.
Or a Betamax machine, if you were even that earlier.
Video recorder.
Yeah. You used to buy a tape, you used to whack it in the machine, and away you go.
They've been banned in our house now.
What? Videotapes?
Yeah.
Why?
Old technology.
Old technology.
Grungy picture.
This is from a man.
It's all...
this is from a man who's... You walk into his technological rooms like going into a time warp with old monitors on the desktop.
Yeah, yeah.
Old laptops, 20 meg hard drives.
I've got a particular dislike for VHS tapes.
Have you?
Yes.
Yes. Well, anyway, remember back then, it was really easy. You wanted to record a television show, you used to set the recorder manually...
That's right.
...on the video recorder, put the tape in and flick the timer switch, if you'd managed to work out how to program the clock.
You always had to remember to flick the timer switch as you ran out the door.
That's the one.
Otherwise you get home and you go, oh, no, I forgot that last step.
And even back then, TV stations didn't move their programming around like they do today. Generally speaking, you'd get a whole series in one go.
Yep.
You'd manage to have a program start around about the same time each and every week, plus or minus maybe 30 seconds or thereabouts.
Yep.
And it would normally finish on time.
Yep.
So back then, life was relatively simple for the technophobic type mums and dads and people who just didn't want to know about it. Just want to record a television program.
They even had that G-code system. I don't know if people still use that. That was the barcode scanning system.
I think they had that in TV guides after a while.
That's right.
It was like a barcode. You get the pen. Excuse me. You get the pen with the little lasery red thing in it. And
zip
it across.
Zip it across the barcode.
And the thing would go beep, 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 and you'd point it at your video recorder and hit the send button.
That's it.
And then it'd go to sleep because it was ready to record.
It was ready to go.
I remember that. That was good. Let's contrast that with what we have today. We have... digital television. We have analog television.
Yep.
Once you get into digital television, you then have the choice of widescreen analog or 4x3 analog.
Yep.
Move into the wonderful world of high definition.
Yep.
You now have the choice of widescreen high definition, but at many different frame rates and field ratios. 720 at 1080i.
720p and 1080i. Yep.
You also have a plethora of devices in which to watch it on. You can watch it on your traditional cathode ray tube like televisions used to be.
Yep.
You can watch it on your LCD. You can watch it on your plasma. You can watch it on your computer. You can watch it on your goddamn PDA.
Watch it on your iPod.
What's the world coming to?
Yeah, there's a lot of options now.
Absolutely. And the biggest dilemma of all is what to record it on.
Yeah.
What do you record on?
Hard disk. I do. I really
There'll
do.
There'll be people going... How do you do that?
How do you do that? Yeah, that's what I've done. I've built a computer which is dedicated solely to sitting under the television. It's got a TV tuner in it.
Yeah.
And it records programs for me.
I'd say you're in a minority. I don't think many people would have that in their living room.
I probably am in a minority, but I think the actual recording to hard disk process is becoming, slowly but surely, it's becoming more and more popular. I'm thinking along the lines of things like the box that Adam always raves about. What's the brand? Help me out here.
TiVo?
No, the other one. What was the other one? The Topfield? The Digitech. I've got models as well. And these have all got hard disks inside them.
Yep.
And I think more and more people are starting to use that technology rather than tapes.
Yep. I agree with you. I'm now embracing hard drive technology.
Mm.
And this is what they call PVRs, personal video recorders.
That's it.
Now, your PVR consists of a computer, but a lot of other people's PVRs consist of a little device that they go down to their local white goods shop and buy.
And it is a computer, but it's just packaged up in a consumer electronics type package.
And no doubt the salesman has come up to the particular consumer and said, what do you want in a PVR? And I bet you 99% of them go, I have no idea.
I have no idea. I think I need one. I know I need one, but I don't know what to have in it.
Now, in this day of PVRs, personal video recorders, they tend to record everything. Which is pretty handy when you think about it.
It is good.
But then again, you want to be able to have flexibility. And back in the good old days of analog television, we used to be able to record one channel and watch another. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yep. We had two tuners. We had a tuner in our tuner in the television, telly. And a tuner in the VCR.
That's right.
And we still have that same or similar setup today. We have tuners in the televisions, sort of. We have a tuner in the PVR.
That's right. But now, just to confuse the issue even more, you can now get two tuners in your PVR.
That's good. That's a good thing.
It is a good thing. But there's people out there going, why do you need two tuners in your PVR? Well, for those of you who really want to know, it just enables you to record two television programs at one time, yeah, on two different channels, which could be good if there's something worth watching.
Or your television might not have a digital tuner in it, and you might want to watch something while you're recording something.
Yes, indeed. But one of the great benefits of the new technology, the new PVRs, is to be able to time slip. Have you done that on your media station, Dr. Ron?
No, I haven't. It's something that my media centre doesn't do.
It's
because the software
obsolete
is...
already.
Well, it is. It's because the software is lacking. And what Andrew is talking about here is the ability to, if the phone rings, press the pause button on live television, answer the phone, talk for 5 minutes, come back to that live television program, press play, and it'll pick up where you paused it.
Absolutely.
The danger is that you're going to get 10 minutes behind the rest of your life, and...
Can I paint two scenarios to you?
The rest of the evening's now 10 minutes out of sync with the rest of the world.
It is. It's very true, except on commercial TV, because you can catch up by just push stop when you...
fast forward through the ads.
But can I say, one of the great advantages of this new technology is when you have young kids.
Right.
And they walk into the room, you put them to bed, they've been in bed for an hour, you're sitting down there watching television, which is an adult-only time slot on a commercial or on the ABC.
Yep.
And they come down, Daddy, I can't sleep. And you're seeing someone being, decapitated. Some of those BBC crime shows are just like, whoops, I don't want you to see that.
Yes, yeah, it's something a bit gory.
The pause button on the PVR comes in very handy at that point in time. Because as you said, Dr. Ron, it stops and it continues on. It continues recording.
It records the program that it's receiving and you can watch it when you're ready.
Yes. The other downside of it is you can confuse your wife terribly.
Does she think that you're watching... A pre-recorded program or something.
Scenario A occurred at our place during the course of the weekend on Friday night, one of those crime nights on the ABC.
Tell me about scenario A.
Scenario A, kids come down, hit the pause button just before they're about to do an autopsy or something like that.
On the television, yep.
Took about 10 minutes or so to settle young one back to bed and all that sort of stuff, and to come back down and to resume watching.
Yep.
Then that was good. That worked really well. Now, scenario B is about to occur. Wife walks into room, sits down and goes, oh, I've wanted to watch this. Okay, good. She didn't know we were 15 minutes delayed, and the program after the program we were watching was the one that she wanted to really watch, in bed, where we don't have the PVR.
Oh, right. So she's missed the first 15 minutes of her program.
So the program's ended, and she's gone in and said, it's already started. It's 15 minutes in. And then I was called all sorts of strange names.
Lots of, expletives.
Marital bliss was not withheld. And that just gives you an example of how these PVR devices work. So, anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. For those of you who are sort of new to this buying technology for Olympics and things like that, you have a minefield of devices to choose from.
If you're a Foxtel subscriber you've got an IQ, then you have a PVR. That's what the IQ is, the IQ box.
Really? It doesn't stand for intelligence.
I don't know what it stands for. Someone who works for Foxtel can let us know.
Oh, that'd be good.
But that does all of this stuff, and it does it on the end of the Big Pond cable. So all of this functionality you've got for your cable programs as well as free-to-air programs.
Sounds good. Adam Turner has a view on all this,
good.
As Adam would, because the TiVo, another PVR device, is about to hit home.
Yes, and this is a special one that Channel 7 have... got the rights for.
Yes, and the new ones that are coming out, because it's not just the TiVo that's coming out, it's a whole plethora of these devices which you can now go down to your local white goods shop and buy. So here's, with what we've just said and what Adam's about to say, hopefully you'll be the, charged consumer who knows a little bit about everything.
You'll be the informed consumer.
That's the one. All right, here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's view from the couch on Tech Talk Radio.
There's a rumble in the lounge room jungle brewing as the former PVR heavyweight Topfield prepares to take on TiVo and Foxtel's IQ2. Topfield has finally discovered Ethernet in the lounge room, but I suspect the former champ has left it too late for a comeback. It looks like 2008 will finally be the year of the high-def personal video recorder in Australia. TiVo and Foxtel's IQ2 are both preparing to step into the ring in July, ready to battle it out over the Olympics. The impressive BeyondWiz PVR is also finally punching above its weight after a series of firmware upgrades. Traditional CE manufacturers such as Panasonic and Sony have also started throwing a few decent punches. There was a time when Topfeel was the heavyweight champion of the lounge room. In a TiVo-less market like Australia, Topfeel's personal video recorders were a knockout, letting you do amazing things like time shifting and ad skipping. Then the competition started to catch up, but Topfeel failed to stay in shape. Topfeel has been on the ropes for more than a year now, and this new round of contenders could see the former champ finally go down for the count. Now, the champ's biggest blunder was refusing to add a humble Ethernet port to the Topfeel PVRs. This would allow users to download an electronic program guide such as Ice TV, which lets the PVR search the TV guide for your favourite shows and automatically record them. Ethernet also lets you access other online services such as Video On Demand, which Ice TV has plans for. It got to the point where Ice TV refused to support any future Topfeel PVRs unless they included an Ethernet port, because of course a PVR without an EPG is little more than an expensive paperweight. Topfeel has taken quite a few body blows, but the big question is, will the champ's rope-a-dope tactics pay off? Topfeel's high-definition TF7100 HD PVRT is about to don the gloves, and it features twin HD tuners, a 320GB car drive, HDMI output, external drive support, and most importantly, Ethernet and Wi-Fi. A year or two ago, I would have said that this would be a haymaker that would floor the competition, but today it's just another contender. The word is that TiVo will finally hit Australian shelves next month, priced at $700, which is cheaper than the new Topfeel box. As well as recording high-definition television, the TiVo will have access to music and movie downloads, plus internet video channels, as well as the ability to recommend shows and automatically record them. Next to this, the Topfeel box is little more than a boring hard drive recorder. It will rely on the services provided by Ice TV to have any hope of competing with TiVo. I suspected that Ice TV would team up with an Australian video on demand provider called Realtime to offer video downloads via compatible PVRs, but Realtime hit the canvas earlier this year. It was bought out by Easy DVD, which is about to relaunch the service as Easy Download. It remains to be seen if Ice TV and Easy Download team up, but Topfeel needs such a team in its corner if it wants another shot at the title. If Topfeel can find its way back to the top, it will be the biggest comeback since Ali took down Foreman in Zaire with a straight hard right in the eighth. Can the former champ still float like a butterfly and sting like a bee? Only time will tell.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Sting like a bee, float like a butterfly. Yeah, interesting times to be told there, I guess. The other interesting thing too, which we didn't talk about earlier, Dr. Ron, was the fact that there's now a million and one different ways to connect your PVR or whatever to your telly.
Yeah, there are.
There's the old coaxial cable and RF cable. RF used to tune in on your TV channel on your old VCR.
That's right.
Now you've got composite.
We don't do that as much anymore.
No. Component. And now we've got a digital equivalent, which is fantastic. So you can digitally connect your new gadget to your new TV. It's called HDMI.
I do. There's a first sort of generation called DVI. Some people might have DVI ports. And then there's the newer version, which is HDMI, as you say.
Stands for High Definition Multimedia Interface.
Mm.
There's a few flavours of that around too, but it's downwardly or backwardly compatible.
Mm.
So if you've got an older version and a newer version, they do seem to talk. You might just lose a little bit of functionality out of it. The DVI, that's used for connecting things like your video 8 cameras or your mini DV cameras into your CD recorders to record on a DVD or something like that.
That's right. I think you'll find that DVI only carries video, and you have to get the audio across as well. No, audio's on DVI,
audio,
is it?
Audio, it's all together.
What am I thinking of?
Don't know. Component video, maybe?
Maybe.
S-Video is another one.
Don't listen to me. Yeah, S-Video is another one. Yeah. SCART.
Yeah, SCART's good. I use SCARTs too, because it lets you bring RGB into a TV as well, cathode ray tube device.
Yeah.
Good quality pictures, better than you'll get on your average LCD or CRT. LCD or plasma, I reckon.
Interesting. There's a lot of different types of connections.
Absolutely.
Can you tell me the difference between... Now, HDMI is... The D in... Oh, it doesn't stand for digital. It stands for definition. HDMI is digital.
Yes,
true. It is. So what's the difference between a $9 HDMI cable and a $499 HDMI cable?
Traditionally, length and quality. Length does matter because it's a digital stream.
Right.
And if you use good quality conductors, good quality cables, which are nice and well shielded, they go a long way. And traditionally, you'd use that between your PVR or your DVD player or whatever, your Blu-ray player, and maybe a video projector where you have to run cable sort of down the wall, around the corner, up and over, into your projector. The long runs, you really do need a good quality cable for that. Otherwise, you get reflections and funny things, and it just doesn't quite work right. And if you've ever seen digital reflections, it's worse than ghosting, let me tell you.
Is it really?
The old analog stuff,
yeah. Because I would have expected that if being digital, it either worked or it didn't work. It was either crystal clear 100% of the time,
you're still sending electrical signals up a cable, and they can still reflect like water in a pond, you know, the water hits the bank and then bounces back. Same sort of stuff. You can get all that sort of bizzo happening and crosstalk and things like that as, you know, these signals, because they're going so fast, they jump across from cable to cable. Not unlike what your ADSL can do in the street if you've got a poorly connected, you know, broadband service.
That's true.
It can jump from cable to cable.
Oh, you notice it because it keeps dropping out. You have to keep redialing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you buy yourself good quality cables, especially if you're doing large runs. If you're doing a short run, maybe you can get away with it.
Just from the DVD player or the Blu-ray player into the back of the TV.
A metre or 2 metres, you can probably get away with it.
But if you had to run, say, 20 metres down the wall and across the ceiling to a projector, for example.
Yeah, you'd spend the money on the cable.
You reckon?
Absolutely.
Yeah? Good tip.
Adam Turner, as we just heard there, was talking about the TiVo. He writes for many sort of organisations in the course of time. Here's one. He said, after 6 months media blackout, TiVo has emerged from the wilderness with what is certainly Australia's most impressive personal video recorder. That's a big rap, Adam.
Mm.
He finally got his hands on one last week at the Sydney launch, and it did live up to his expectations. The TiVo will go on sale at Harvey Norman's on July 29, and it's going to set you back $699 Australian dollars. What do you reckon, Dr. Ron? Is that in the wish list? We're going to stick with your hard drive in your media station under your bench.
I'm going to stick with my media station for now, but I'm watching the evolution of these devices with great interest.
Do you reckon you could use two tuners, dual digital tuners? Would that be a benefit to you? Are you that much of a TV junkie?
Look, it probably wouldn't be a benefit to me because I've got a digital tuner that's built in to my television, but a lot of people don't.
Mm.
And a lot of people get...
Some of the early plasmas didn't have them, did they?
Correct. And people get PVRs and they think, well, this watching the digital signals, there's $1 million on the analog one. This is heaps better. And they go to record a program, but they've got to make a decision then. Do they want the recording to look nice and sharp? Or do they want what they're watching in real time to look nice and sharp? And they have to make a decision. That's a horrible decision to have to make. If you had two tuners built in, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Because the hard drives can record many things at one time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very handy.
Yep.
Now, also, whilst we're talking about television and Olympic Games and all that, as we know, the Beijing Olympics are not far away. Pre-games excitement has sparked a 39% surge in sales of LCD and plasma TV so far this year, fanned by the confirmation that the Beijing Olympics will be the first to be telecast in high definition. Now, I think Panasonic or one of those major companies, JVC, I can't remember who, but I have seen an ad on the telly which is saying, yeah, for the first time.
And they reckon that it's because people want to watch the Olympic Games, that they're rushing out and upgrading the televisions.
Well, let's just face it, petrol's at an all-time high. There's not many people going out these days. The television industry is making a bit of a revival.
it's all you can do just to stay in and watch television quietly.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going to be more friendly to the environment, don't burn petrol. Go and burn some brown coal and generate some electricity and watch your plasma.
Awesome, not T3, what was it? The other stuff. Yeah.
Oh, the fluoride.
The gas.
That stuff, absolutely. So, because Beijing is in a similar time zone, all major events will be shown live in Australia, which is a pleasant change, really, because normally it's on the other side of the world, and it's like Wimbledon. You have to get up at 3 a.m. to see the finals finish.
Yeah.
Or if you're watching the Grand Prix, you fall asleep at the last lap.
Indeed.
Don't you hate that?
I hate that.
So, in Brisbane in particular, a Harvey Norman franchisee confirmed the surge in sales of high-definition TV. So, you know, Brizzy's looking to, you know, really watch the games. They did have the Commonwealth Games up there. Remember that?
That was ages and ages ago. But
Brisbane, I mean, that was a long time ago.
JB Hi-Fi have also said there's been a huge jump in high-definition sales. And there's been, with 15 stores in the state, they estimate 50 to 80 TVs are sold every store every week.
How many?
50 to 80 TVs are sold in every store every week.
That's not so bad.
That's a lot of tellies, when you think about that. And by the way, I've also come to the conclusion that price also counts in LCD and plasma televisions. You pay good money, you'll get a good set. Just be wary, there's sharks out there.
Yeah.
But if you spend the dollars, they're good. But you will be disappointed in a cheap one.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. No shadow of a doubt with that. Don't forget what Michael Cremean said when he was on the show here recently, too, who's an audio engineer who works in broadcast television. And that is the cheaper sets have slower refresh rates, and chances are you'll get lip sync problems.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That'd be terrible because...
See, that was interesting with Michael talking about that. I always thought that it was to do with the transmission from the network, but it's actually something that can be manifesting itself right in your lounge room.
Absolutely.
With your cheap television.
Yep.
Wow.
And then even doing outside broadcasts and things like that, the guys say that there's all sorts of dilemmas because of monitoring in their outside broadcast vans.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yep.
No one knows what to believe these days, the pictures or your ears.
Yes.
Anyway, so there you go. There's a bit of a wrap for the last little bit on Tech Talk Radio, all about LCDs, plasmas, free-to-air.
PVRs.
Have we nailed it? Go back and listen to the podcast if in doubt. And then jump on the forum if you've got a question. It's probably the best bet, isn't
it?
Yeah. Because there's a lot of decisions a consumer has to make these days. No longer is it hard. It's extremely difficult. Because if I remember when my parents first bought one, and a lot of people are like, can you come around and get my video, my VHS to work? So that was hard.
I can remember when I bought...
Now it's just a minefield. It's diabolically hard.
Well, it is. I brought... When I purchased my television, I dragged you along to the store.
Yes, that's right.
Because I started going cross-eyed. I was saying, look here, look at that one for me. Look at that one. Look at that one. I know which one I reckon's good. You tell me what are your initial impressions. You start, even if you are well-researched and you think you know it all in the back of your mind, you just start to get bamboozled after looking at 100 different televisions.
Yes, you do. Mm. Anyway, they all look the same after a while. You don't know what to look for. You don't know what to believe when the salesman does his pitch.
Oh, that's right. That's the last thing you want to listen to, isn't it? The sales pitch.
Yeah. Have you got internet in your car?
Only when I've got my mobile phone turned on. Why? What have you got?
We'll talk about that after the break.
Okay.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to.
She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped in the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on e-pray, and you get a whole service. Just on
how does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back. Hello to some listeners that have been emailing us. Simon Templer. Hello, Simon.
Hi, Simon.
Let me scroll down. I was just reading somebody else that's just there for the moment. It's good to see live positioning data being made available to mobile phone users. It would be good for business to be able to keep track of workers in the field. Well, Telstra do that already, don't they?
Indeed, indeed.
Only drawback I can see at present is the complexity of handsets available that are able to use the service. Not exactly what I'd recommend for ease of use in that environment. So, yeah, they'll become a bit easier and a bit better, and GPS is working in your back pockets. Traditionally, same problem as I think you mentioned earlier, Dr. Ron, with one of our Queensland listeners saying that the railway stations underground don't really work too well for GPS.
The bus stations,
he also says, for example, he uses an S60, a Symbian Nokia, which is problematic for the average user. The lower end S40 Nokias are much more efficient businesses that issue mobile phones to its employees. Hopefully GPS services will be available in lower end phones for average users. Well, yeah, that's
hopefully
pretty much.
Fingers crossed.
In my Sony Ericsson just by standard. I think they'll come out like cameras.
Manufacturers will start to work them in.
Phones are just evolving, really, aren't they? John in Adelaide also. G'day, John. The webcam's getting a bit boring. Yeah, it's not on tonight.
It'll be why, John. That's why it's dark.
It's probably the back of from about 2 or 3 weeks ago when we had it in last. We will endeavour to bring the webcam in one night in the not too distant. It's a pretty much an at-call type sort of stuff.
The most we could do to get Andrew and I in front of two microphones tonight, John, so webcams.
Absolutely. There's a lot of sniffles in the area around here at the moment. Love the stuff you're doing on tonight's PVRs. I made one last week as per the method suggested by Darren of the PC User, DivX from Strathfield, with the added IDE hard drive of whatever size you want, $69 for the DVX. The prices are steel. Records the video and embeds the audio in the inbuilt standard def digital tuner as a data stream, so no loss of quality, and can be set to record as long as you want. Well, I must admit, I use a Strongbox. There's a new HD receiver box out there, which
that's a new one that you've got.
Yeah, which lets you plug into the an external hard drive, a USB hard drive. Don't use a stick. I've tried a stick. Sticks are good. They seem to work. But when push comes to the shove, they're not too flash. But if you plug it into a
video, files get big fast too, don't
they?
Well,
they do. But 4 gig, I thought would be fine, and I tried it, and it does record it, and it does play back. Just that when it exceeds its file limit, it has to create a new file, and it's a bit slow. Doing that. So anyway,
I've got two tweets here from people. Two Crows Down says there's no difference in cables according to some reviews. We're talking about.
Don't believe it.
No, don't believe it. Interesting. And
do some research, everyone, if you're in doubt.
If you're in doubt. And Warlock says, also speaking of such things, DVI is just video, no audio. I think that's what I was
You were mentioning that.
Yeah, I think
DVI
is just video.
The DVI that comes out of your video camera and goes into your CD-DVD burner does have audio.
It carries audio.
I know, because I've done it, and I can personally speak from experience on that one.
Well, I wasn't thinking cameras. I was thinking televisions and Blu-ray players. So maybe that's slightly different standard there.
Yes.
I think HDMI is the video itself is exactly the same, but HDMI always carries audio. I think that's how it works. So there might be different types of DVI. Thanks, Warlock, and thanks, Two Crows Down.
Yes, I can see them on the screen here at the moment, too.
There you go.
Two cows is in Perth. I mean, Two Crows Down.
Two dogs.
in Perth. So there you go. Listening to us on the other side of the country, which is very nice. Now, before the break, I mentioned, Dr. Ron, that the internet comes to your car. Want to browse the internet, update your Facebook profile, answer emails, do some eBay shopping, and add to your MySpace blog from your car?
Oh, no.
Just don't do it while you're driving.
Just before you drive into the back of the person in front of you? Yep.
Absolutely. I wonder if there's any laws for doing that. Like, you're not allowed to text when you drive, so I guess it would fall under the same sort of thing. No Facebooking whilst you're driving.
You're not allowed to drive carelessly, and it's a rather large umbrella. I think that would probably figure in that somehow.
I'm sure it would. Technology to bring the information superhighway to our real highways is on the way, though not all car makers see eye to eye, and the risk of driver distraction is already raising safety concerns, even here in the studio tonight before I got to that. Car makers in the US and Europe are racing to be the first to release models with unrestricted internet access this year, but don't count on it here.
Right.
Despite the fact that, it's all happening. In the US, Chrysler has announced that wireless internet will appear as an option in its new cars from September.
That's right. We had this in the news last week, I think.
And it's meant to be used by passengers only
if
the car is moving.
So the whole car becomes a hotspot.
I guess so.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
It is. You plug your SIM into the boot somewhere. It must be a little bit of electronics in there, and it becomes a local wireless hotspot.
All you need is a very small little box, like the size of a PDA, and as I say, you'd have it in the boot or the glove box.
In Europe, BMW is the car brand claiming a world first with an expanded version of its existing
connected drive system, allowing full access to the internet via a dashboard screen and a mouse-like controller on the central console. Naturally, to be operated by the driver or front passenger, but only when the car is stopped.
Ah.
So, yes, the mind boggles, really, doesn't it? Because if you think about the fact that, you know, we can have DVDs in our car these days, now there's a distraction, not so much for the driver, but for the driver of the car behind.
Yeah,
have you noticed that?
Yeah, especially if they're embedded in
trying
the...
Trying to work out what movie they're watching
in
the car next to you.
They're in the headrests of the, like, the driver's headrest or the... Or the front passenger's headrest, and they're facing the back seat passengers.
Too right.
You can see them through the rear window, can't you?
I don't think internet in the car is really that flash. I think really the Bluetoothy sort of stuff. Because, like, seriously, you just want to get your music off your iPod or your whatever, MP3 player, into your car stereo, don't you? And to do that without cables in the car, so you just pop your iPod down in the center console, and away you go.
Well, I do that, and I've got a little FM transmitter. And I've just got a memory in my... car stereo radio.
Yeah.
I just hit that button and it tunes me into my music player.
And that'd be good because then you don't have cables everywhere. Because that's what used to happen. Remember the old cables that used to be draped across the gear stick and around the shift and up and over the dashboard and through the sun visor and around the mirror?
You put your foot through them trying to change the gears. And
then you hit the brakes in the CD player and zip underneath your foot.
Yeah.
Oh, let's not go there. Not the good old days, really,
weren't they? Good times.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron and Andrew McComb in this evening. We're all suffering the dreaded over here, so that's why we're a bit short on numbers. JD, he'll be in the studio again soon.
JD says hello. He's listening to us live on the stream from Brisbane.
He's in Brisbane.
Hi, JD.
Don't go on the trains, JD. You need a special card.
The buses.
Yeah. The buses. Yes.
You'll go underground and you'll disappear.
We have a lot of listeners in Queensland.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Switch. Hi, Switch listeners.
Yep, and hello to everybody up in Queensland listening to us on the
radio.
Absolutely.
Cairns, all over the place. Now, Dr. Ron, you mentioned also earlier in the news that Westpac had a bit of a faux pas when it came to paying people, or a bit of a computer glitch.
Yes, they had an awkward moment last week.
Yes. A lot of people got paid twice. I wonder if they took it out.
I didn't get paid twice.
You don't bank with Westpac, that's why. Westpac spokesman Mr. David Lording said a technical glitch overnight meant that the batch of the payroll and direct debit transactions was processed twice. To me, that's someone careless pushing the button twice.
How can that happen?
I don't know, it's quite easy. Have you ever tried launching something on your Windows desktop and you go click, 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 and you get four versions of it?
Yeah, but how could...
I reckon that's how it happened.
How could a series of such, like, mouse clicks or something very simple like that have such an enormous flow-on effect? $1 billion worth of transactions were affected. It's enormous.
The press release said if you're one of those affected customers, don't get too excited. Westpac is already reversing the transactions. Maybe you had to get it out real quick.
They'd track you down, though, wouldn't they?
Oh, I'm sure they would.
They'd hunt you down to the end of the earth.
But as you say, in this day and age, with technology being what it is, that's a bit of a faux pas, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And the other thing, too, while we're speaking of banking, have you used your PIN number assigned to your credit card or your, to your credit card when you've made a purchase on a credit card these days?
No, the credit card I have is a credit card. I get a statement every month and I have to pay the amount on that statement. And if I don't pay it, it rolls over to the next month and I get some enormous 28.5% random interest charge.
Yeah.
But I always sign every transaction for that card. I don't have a PIN.
Oh, really? On that card, do you have like a savings account or a checking account with it?
No.
Oh, that could be why.
It's the one credit account.
That could be why. I have a card which has a check account associated with it as well as the credit card.
Yep.
And you can use the PIN number that you use in the ATM to withdraw cash from your credit or from your check account as your PIN signatory nowadays, which is a lot safer than signing a piece of paper. Because if you think about it, you know the four-digit PIN number that you whack into the teller machine.
Yep.
There's not much chance of, you've got a 1 in 1,000 chance, 1 in 10,000 chance of getting it right if you nick the card.
Yep.
Whereas on the back of the card, you can pretty much forge a signature if you sit down and practice it long enough, can't you? And then the unduly person who does the transaction is probably going to, have you seen them look at your credit card signature? They don't.
Yeah,
they should.
Some do. Some make a bit of an effort, and others just... They hand the card back to you sometimes, don't they? They don't even look at what you're signing,
So you get debited that way, and then you've got all the rigmarole of going through that. So I must admit, I think what the banks are doing now with a PIN number for your credit card is a lot more secure and a bit more, even for a merchant, you know, well, at least you know that that's the right person. But you still got to sign your card. Don't forget that, because if you don't sign it, then you're really in the trouble.
Anyone can sign it and use it if they find it in the street,
or you'll drop it or lose it. Yeah.
Yeah. Making you use a PIN as opposed to signing it is putting the security onus back on you, because you're responsible for the security of the PIN.
You are.
If you sign, or if there's a card system in place like my one, we have to sign for it. The onus is on the merchant, from a security point of view, to check that the signature is correct. So there's sort of a shifting responsibility there in a way.
But also probably good for the banks too, because if there is a dispute and a PIN's been entered, they go, oh, sorry.
Exactly. It comes back to you, the customer.
Whereas,
account for why that PIN number was used.
Yeah. Whereas,
I tried not to say PIN number, but I just did. Yep. Go on.
Yes, whereas the other way is that, you know, you had to get out the photocopied funny electronic signature and hold it up to the light and go, is that you? No. Okay.
That one. Yeah.
So, yep. I don't know. It's I think it's a good system, personally speaking.
If you're, next time you're in a nightclub, because I know that you're a fairly heavy clubber.
Doof doof music.
Yeah. Take your credit card out of your wallet. Just have a look at it under the UV light.
Why?
Just do it. It's an interesting experiment.
Dr. Ron, just between you and me, no one else is listening.
Okay.
I don't go to clubs.
Well, what? Yes, you do. Where is it you're going then when you tell Linda? Look, we'll come back to that later.
That's why we turn the phones off.
Yeah, I know. If you take your credit, if you take an American Express card out of your wallet, look at it under UV,
it'll
have the big letters across the card, Amex.
Yeah?
Yeah, and you can only see it under UV. I think you'll find similar thing with Visa cards.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I should check it out.
Magic secret markings, which you don't normally see. But you notice it when you're in pubs and things, because they've got lots of UV light. There you go. Give it a go.
I will. Next time I'm clubbing and pubbing.
Yep.
Take a break. We're going to have a drink and breathe the air, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening.
Do no evil, Google sued for $1 billion.
Is this a job for government, though, or is it a job for ISPs to provide interlink?
Hey, yeah, nerd alert. What?
The thing is, people put it on vibrate or silence, and you can't tell.
Which is which? What do you mean, which is which?
You can't vote with your feet because there are no other...
Oh, did I say that? Yeah, you might have. Oh. 12 megabits, though.
Entertaining.
What's the problem, Dr. Ron?
Informative.
Has it got a network port on the back?
Independent.
Do they do that in some
other countries? Absolutely they do.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
She tells me.
Keeps your knees warm, doesn't it?
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Thanks for everyone giving us a bit of a Twitter tonight, too. It's interesting to see all those things coming. It's lovely technology, isn't it? We might try it a bit later on, too, and see what happens down the track as well with other sorts of gadgety things. We had some good suggestions for a live chat board and things like that, too.
Yeah, I saw that. Some people that want us to have live chat while we're on the show, like an IRC style.
Not sure how we're going to moderate that, but nonetheless.
No.
You don't want nasty things being said up there, because it's a family show, after all.
Yeah, yeah. So, we'll give it a go, though. It's something that we're looking at.
Absolutely. Mm. $8 million is being allocated for mobile service holes, just when we thought it was safe to get our mobile networks out there and 3G and the CDMA was turned off and all that sort of stuff. The federal government has released an $8 million tender to fill holes in Australia's rural mobile service coverage.
For everybody.
The Department of Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy.
Yes.
DBCDE.
The DBCDE.
Few acronyms.
Yeah.
Too many of those these days. Has allocated the money under its 2008-2009 Mobile Connect program. The program aims to fill mobile service black spots around rural highways and communities. So what's going to happen there? Like, they're going to put up a tower. There's going to be some form of mobile base station. But whose?
Well, they're making it available to everyone is my reading of that.
I wonder if it gets plugged into the Telstra network, or all the networks get a chance to have a bit of space on the tower and pop a cell up there or something.
Maybe all the networks get to apply for use.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there you go. That came out of Senator Conroy's office a couple of days back. So it'll be interesting to see a little bit more about that as time goes by, too.
It's good that they're taking the coverage problems in the bush seriously.
Yeah.
Hopefully anyway, this will go some way towards fixing the problem.
They should be extending the CDMA black spots. Well, not that they had any. That's the thing. Anyway. Windows XP, the end is nigh. Microsoft was due to stop shipping its XP operating system to computer manufacturers last Monday in the face of a lot of opposition.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh,
absolutely. Bring it on. As of now, a petition to keep sales of XP alive has some 210,000 digital signatures. But today's deadline, or the deadline, is looming. And they're trying to get you to go and sign up and get a bit more of a petition. So they've nearly got 250,000 people saying, well, save us, we need XP,
Well, it's going to be supported for many, many years yet.
But you just won't be able to buy a new copy of it.
That's the thing. They're saying that Microsoft are going to stop offering it as a new product which you can buy off the shelf.
Last week, the firm sent out a letter to customers telling them that it would be extending critical support for Windows XP until 2014, with June the 30th, 2008, being the end of sales for XP. So we'll wait and see what happens. I must admit, we did buy a copy in the office the other day of Windows XP, but I think it was before the end of June 30th, so I don't know. I wonder if it's going to vary from country to country, too.
What's the alternative? OS 10.
OS X, Vista.
Ubuntu.
DOS 3.1.1.
Yeah.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah, it is a valid alternative.
Well, and another alternative.
Another one.
You should ask Dr. Ron. Another alternative.
There's another alternative.
Is the current version of Windows Server 2008. People are using it as a desktop.
As a desktop, are they really?
Yep. See, Windows 2008 Server was supposed to be the match made in heaven for Vista.
Yep.
Like Windows Server 2003 was the equivalent for XP.
Yep.
Now, with all the service patches and goodness knows what else that's come out of recent times, basically XP now has the same security and a few new gadgets being put on it, which now supports Windows Server 2008.
Right.
But everyone's gone, or the IT guys have gone, yeah, let's use that as a workstation because it's nice and lightweight.
But isn't that expensive from a licensing point of view?
Probably. But what are the alternatives, as you just said? If XP's going, you can either spend a lot of money on Vista Business, which is probably pretty much the same as Windows Server 2008. It's just interesting to see what the IT community's up to in a lot of respects, because that in itself is a fairly, I know, gutsy call. You need a bit of a savage computer, I would have thought. Well, then again, maybe not, because that's the joys of Windows Server 2008. It's very much modularized. You don't install everything.
That's right.
You only choose the bits that you want.
You can install the components that you're wanting.
So there you go, an IT guy's doing that. See, that's the other thing, too, which doesn't sort of quite add up, is that Windows Server 2008 has been embraced by IT professionals around the countryside, around the world, in fact. And its pair, Vista, has been shunned.
Yeah.
You're not even developers are developing for it.
No, that's right.
So, well, I think...
Are you running Server 2008?
I have the install disks. Microsoft sent them to me recently. But unfortunately, at this point in time, I've had too many other things to do, so...
I'd like to send you this stuff. You're a partner.
I'm a partner, Microsoft. So they send these things out to all their partners, and I'm yet to install it. But I will give it a run for its money in my next quiet period, which will hopefully be Christmas, maybe the year after next.
And by then, you'll have to worry. We'll have, the next version of Windows out anyway.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, what's that? Windows 7, isn't it?
That's the one.
Yeah, you're going to hang out for that one, or you're going to go straight to...
to Vista? Straight to OS X.
Join Adam over there on the dark side.
Adam and JD.
Absolutely.
That's right. The PCs in this... PCs running Windows in this radio studio are becoming rapidly outnumbered, aren't they?
Too right. And also, while we're talking about security and stuff like that, Apple is going to patch 25 Mac OS X vulnerabilities in the next Patch Tuesday equivalent for OS X. So right. The new version come out, obviously.
25 vulnerabilities.
Yep. Only 25 they've found this time around. But that's not bad. It follows about a month ago fixes and flaws in a dozen of its components for OS X 10.4, which is Tiger, and now Leopard, ranging from Alias Manager and the Dock to VPN and WebKit. Apple labelled 11 of the 25 vulnerabilities with its arbitrary code execution tag, thus slotting them into the category that vendors, which rate them as a critical threat.
Right.
So, yeah, there you go. The moral of the story is update and patch as available, unless you've got a damn good reason not to.
Mm.
A damn good reason. As he shuffles his papers, because I was looking for something else down the back here. Web vulnerabilities is on the increase because people don't patch.
Mm.
They just don't. And it's becoming a real problem because people are just, here we go, unpatched web browsers prevalent on the internet. Only 59.1% of people use or update their patches on their web browsers.
Mm.
Now, if you're going to find a vulnerability and someone's going to come and have a go at you, where's the weakest link? It's your web browser.
Yeah.
So you should make sure that they're patched. For goodness sakes, everybody.
Web browsers, how people have traditionally got software onto your computer.
You get
prompted to download things, or things are just downloaded by stealth on web pages without you even realising it.
Yep.
And it makes it very easy to get stuff onto your computer.
Go to a web page and they arbitrarily execute some little bit of code while you're not watching.
That's right. And it has an effect on your computer locally.
That's what phishing does. Makes you click the link or take you to a link, and it's normally to a page which is dubious.
That's right. That's right. They send spam emails with links. The links take you to, bogus websites, as Andrew said.
Internet Explorer 8, which hasn't been released yet, is already getting major security upgrades. Microsoft is planning two new security features for the upcoming beta version of IE8. Let's hope it's better than IE7, 6, 5, and all the others, from a web designer's point of view. The IE8 Beta 2 release will feature a pair of new security filters which are designed to filter out phishing attempts and cross-site scripting attacks. For the phishing attacks, Microsoft is rolling out Smart Screen, a filter which is designed to screen out known URLs. So you've obviously got to be online there to find out what the known URLs are.
Smart Screen, okay.
Yep. The screening software which utilizes a phishing filter in IE7 will support improvements, heuristics, and availability to analyze entire URL strings for phishing site dedication. So there you go, phishing sites. If you update your browsers, you won't have these phishing problems, is what I'd be saying to you. In other web-based news, Firefox 3 did make it into the Guinness Book of Records.
Good on them. Well done, Mozilla. They've done a very good job.
Yes, the Guinness Book of Records did validate Firefox 3 launch day.
Yep.
And said that it was successful in having the world record set for the amount of downloads of a piece of software in a 24-hour period. The grand total?
Yeah, I didn't hear. I'm guessing was over 10 million?
No. In the first 24 hours, 8 million.
Oh, there you go.
And 2,530.
That's
to be precise.
Isn't it great?
So it just goes to show the way that people are adapting to new browsers, especially Firefox. It's a damn fine browser.
It's good.
And it works on all platforms.
Well, does.
The ones that I've been experienced with. How's it going on Ubuntu? Are you happy with it on Ubuntu?
On the new version, or the latest version of Ubuntu, it works very well. And I'm using 8.04. on the machine that I've got in front of me right at the moment.
Mm.
Now, the workstation I've got at home, which is 6.06, which is an earlier version of Ubuntu, had some problems with getting it going on that, some dependency problems, but I'm sure that they'll be
resolved.
What's
a dependency problem?
Well, dependencies are files or software that a particular program needs to have installed, needs to have the environment set up in a particular way on the computer in order to run properly.
Okay.
And there are some dependencies which uninstall the standard on 6.06, and I've tried to get it going and had a fair bit of troubles, but I'm sure that they'll have it resolved fairly soon.
Sorry, we just had an email from Adam Turner saying the internet's not out there. Elton John shut it down. Where'd you hear that
from? That's right, Elton John.
Remember that?
That's right, that was his suggestion. Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, no, the 8.04 version of Ubuntu, the latest version, is actually shipped with a beta of Firefox 3. So you can upgrade that to the production version quite easily.
Exactly. Another email in from Simon, who's listening as well. Internet in the car could be useful for weather warnings, voice over IP, a GPS, and a vehicle management system monitoring. The list could go on. I've used my PIN to sign my Visa debit card, and it's more secure considering many merchants don't even bother to look at the signatures. I concur with
that.
Yes. Exactly right, Simon.
This is it. This is it.
So, yes. PDF.
PDFs?
Adobe's PDF format, portable document files.
Portable document.
They're damn fine
files.
Things.
Yeah, they're the ones.
In fact, they're so damn fine that it's now been ratified as an international standard.
Oh, that'll make Adobe happy.
It's got its own ISO number.
Really?
Did you know ISO 32001?
There are so many third-party PDF products, it's not funny. You have PDF writers, PDF readers.
I wonder what this will now do in respect to what Adobe has to do, sort of like sharing it-wise, because it's now an international standard.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have to share it with Microsoft? Remember the big Open Office fracas recently where Microsoft said, no, we can't ship this as part of the Office system. You have to go and download it.
Yeah, we need our own open standard.
I wonder if that's going to change that at all. But ISO, or ISO, however they pronounce themselves, will now be responsible for publishing the specifications for the current version and updating future developments of the version. The move, according to Adobe's CTO, Kevin Lynch, is in response to governments and organisations increasingly requesting open formats. Maintenance of the PDF specification by an external and participatory organisation will help continue to drive innovation and expand the rich PDF ecosystem that has evolved over the past 15 years. Now, can I just say, from a web development point of view, from a graphic point of view, PDFs are absolutely fantastic because you can put anything into these little envelopes, and they look exactly how you expect them.
It's predictable in the reader.
Machine.
Yep, definitely.
And the added bonus is you can print them pretty much absolutely anywhere. I've never known a PDF file to actually not print the way you expect it, which I think is very important, especially if it's, say, an important banking document where you have to sign it and send it back.
Yep.
Or, you know, all that sort of stuff. We have graphic files, you know, sending print specifications to a printer for a major press ad. It's terrific, and it supports all forms of, or primarily the two forms of graphic formats, which is vector-based and raster-based graphics. So you can put a JPEG in there, you can put a logo in there, and it doesn't fall apart if you zoom in on it really, really, you know, do a big zoom in on it and things like that. It supports all the file formats which developers and designers use today. So it's a fantastic format.
So what's Adobe's attitude towards the ratification of the PDF format by ISO? They're just going with the flow, are they? They're saying that, yeah, well, it had to happen, and people are wanting open standards, so this is we're going to support this, because they're going to relinquish a fair bit of control, aren't they?
Over, well, you would think
used to be a proprietary format.
Look, I don't think Adobe have an issue. In fact, if anything, they'd probably be fairly proud of their successes. Future versions of the PDF will be published as subsequent parts of the standard by the ISO subcommittee in changes of its maintenance and development. So it looks like they'll continue it ongoing, which is a great thing from Adobe's point of view.
That is good.
Anyway, I think, the PDF is, we do need a standard like that where we can have images and pictures and all those sort of good things that present and look exactly the same way at the other end. Some other interesting news, just briefly. The Department of Justice investigates the Yahoo and Google deal. I'm sort of a bit over all these deals. Have you kept up with all the, you know,
Yahoo and Google's
and Microsoft's and all that sort of stuff?
It's going to be Microhoo.
Yeah, and when I say the Department of Justice, we're talking about the US version.
Yes.
The US Department of Justice has launched an antitrust investigation into the advertising deal announced by Yahoo and Google in June. Non-exclusive agreements lets Yahoo use Google's AdSense and search and AdSense for content advertising programs, effectively allowing Yahoo the option of displaying Google ads alongside its own search results.
Right.
Do we care? Is it a problem?
It's up to the Department of Justice to decide if it's a problem.
No.
I guess, the bigger issue is, when all these massive companies start to merge and start to do deals with each other, are we, as consumers, are we winners?
Don't know.
At the end of the day?
Do you really look at the paid ads in Google?
Well, no, personally I don't. I don't think I do.
No.
Advertisers might be laughing and say, Dr. Ron, we know what you buy. We know what ads we punch down to your web browser.
That's fine.
They're working well. But I don't know. Is it subliminal or does it just happen subconsciously? Or
I treat organic results as being what I want the user on my Google search, or any search for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of companies don't actually, some put paid advertisements into that, like Yahoo do.
But you still see those paid advertisements, don't you?
As long as you know they are a paid advertisement.
Yeah, and they register in the back of your mind, so even though you're not clicking on them, you're still digesting information there.
Absolutely. And finally, before we go to the conclusion of tonight's Tech Talk Radio with the Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week, eBay, forced to eat humble pie.
Oh, really? Over PayPal?
Over PayPal, The ACCC has won. eBay has suffered an ultimate embarrassment of being forced to cancel its ridiculously anti-competitive plan to force buyers and sellers to use PayPal only. But it's flip-flop enough to restore any credibility. What about the problem of negative seller feedback? What about PayPal's extremely poor customer service? And Will Head's role at eBay Australia, simply for being so incredibly stupid? Or do we point the fingers at eBay HQ in the United States?
I've purchased three things on eBay during the week.
That's from ITY, by the way.
And on each occasion, I've gone to pay via PayPal and I've emailed the person and said, Hey, do you want to just give us your BSB and your bank account number? I'll just transfer you the cash. It's a lot cheaper. And
oh, that's a way around it.
And three out of three times they've said, yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. Do that. Here's my account number.
So, Dr. Ron, I never thought you'd like that.
Oh, well, that's a perfectly legitimate way of paying. And now it's been upheld by the ACCC that they eBay have to cater for people who want to pay via direct transfer.
And so endeth the lesson. Or does it?
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Yeah, I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off
CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a centimeter. Fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilos. Don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do appear.
Well, this talk to Tech Talk Radio. Well, this talk.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
You listen to music on a portable music player, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, bed? Absolutely, all the time. Especially while I'm mowing the lawns, I like whacking the pods in.
I do it on my telephone. I've got a Sony Ericsson telephone. And the new Sony Ericsson is the W960i, which is a Walkman phone. A combination of a 3G PDA and a high-performance media player. It can pack up to 8,000 songs.
That's a lot. How big storage?
Ah, you ask. I'll get to that.
Keep going.
Includes a Walkman player with a touchscreen navigation on a large 2.6-inch display. It's got a 3.2-megapixel camera. We're talking about megapixels and cameras before.
We were.
Yeah, so 3.2 with a 3x digital zoom and widescreen for watching video in TV quality. I don't know what that means.
TV quality, that's not good.
No, that doesn't sound promising. Surf the web via Wi-Fi or 3G. Listen to MP3 files, AAC.
Oh, they've got everything.
AAC Plus. EAAC Plus.
Oh, they got too much now.
A WAV and M4A encoded files. It also has an Opera web browser and Microsoft Exchange ActiveSync email support. The RRP is $1,099. For more information, you can go to sonyericsson.com.au.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Have you ever been on to a video sharing website like YouTube?
Yes.
And thought, it'd be really cool if I could actually download that file and use it for whatever purpose.
Well, I don't know whether I've wanted to download them all. I've always found them quite amusing. The only reason I want to download them is to email them to someone or something like that.
Yes. There's a website which is a flash streaming video converter. So the website of the week is www.vconversion.com.
Oh, really? So it converts it as it comes in, does it?
That's right.
Well, that's a bit scary.
What you do is you copy and paste the URL. So, for example, from YouTube, you put it into a
live
text box
and cooking,
there.
For example.
Exactly right.
Video on our
there
cooking
you go.
Show.
You could give that a try. That's your mission during the week. Paste the URL in, click convert, and select what video format you want. And then it will actually prompt you to open save as dialogue.
Like
and you can then download the file. It'll create it for you. So that's our website, neat little utility, theconversion.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much. I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This isn't a funny odd spot, it's a scary odd spot. And GD, who's a regular listener and contributor, has been emailing me updates through the week.
This is the house, the haunted, radiated house. Yes.
The head of a New South Wales parliamentary inquiry into uranium contamination in a Sydney street says a preliminary inspection has revealed unacceptable levels of radioactivity. Independent tests of Nelson Parade in Hunters Hill have found radiation levels 350 times higher than what's considered safe.
That's a lot. Did someone leave the microwave door open?
I don't know what
has
happened.
Work?
I don't know.
Uranium plant underneath their house or
something? Well, there's an update as of tonight. The ABC has decided not to build its new Brisbane headquarters on a site in Newstead for the same reason. ABC Managing Director Mark Scott says testing found elevated levels of radioactive material in the area. He says the organisation has commenced action in the Supreme Court to cancel the purchase of the land.
Oh, my goodness.
It's getting out of control.
Gee, what's going on up there? Because the ABC had problems with other cancers and things like that up in ABC land in Brisbane.
Well, they did. That's right. That's right.
Maybe it's in the air up there. I don't know.
Something in the air. Not good. Well, I'll put some links to that in the show notes if you want to read more
about
the...
Be good.
Yes, the high radioactivity readings.
That's good. Tata saying from a business point of view, updates, patches, etc. is a matter of course. A personal point of view... time waster. Well, do or die at your own peril, I reckon.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone who's contributed on Twitter tonight.
It's working well.
It's been very good.
Thanks, Tardis. Thanks, Warlock, and everybody else who's been...
Everyone has been. A lot of people twittering and emailing and all sorts of stuff. Even comments about the music from afar, the other side of town.
That's right.
Yeah, it's good.
Now, live IRC chat. We'll take that on board. Thanks, everyone. We've had about 10 messages come in the space of half an hour saying, yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Oh, and eBay got everyone talking too.
Yeah.
We'll have to get it going, I think. All right. Job for another day. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron and Andrew McComb, and a bit of a depleted panel. We're all dropping like flies with the current lurgy that's around and all that sort of stuff.
I'll be back with a voice next week.
Hopefully we'll be able to breathe and talk in the next show, and a few buttons will go in the right order, and things will happen just nicely. Until next week, it's been fantastic being in your ears and your iPods, wherever you are around Australia or around the world. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Hanlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.